you know, just to keep track of me and, you know, give a little bit. I mean, I think Dad's viewpoint was, well, he's, you know, he's not out causing trouble. If he's coon hunting, then, you know, we're gonna let you hunt, but you gotta be, you know, you gotta be home at a certain time. So, Dad also had a double barrel Fox shotgun, 12 gauge, and I used to bird hunt. Used to do a lot of bird hunting. Back then, they were quail. Are still around here. They're not around here anymore. But we had a bird dog named Kaiser, and Daddy would take me quail hunting, and when dove season came around, we'd, you know, go dove hunting or this, that, and the other. Well, I came home from school one day and got a wild hare and decided I was going, it's dove season, and I got the shotgun out and went and set up on the edge of the cornfield out here and was going to do some dove hunting. So, I got out in the yard with the shotgun. I hadn't got down to the cornfield yet. And here comes Dad around the corner in the truck coming home from work. And just as soon as he pulled up in the yard, he got out of the truck and he saw me with that shotgun. And he said, "Bring that shotgun here now." And about that time, here comes a dove over the field. And I shot both barrels. And he had rat-holed two $100 bills in the end of that shotgun so Mama wouldn't find them. And just obliterated $200 right in front of him with that shotgun. Oh, man, he was so mad at me. He was angry. Oh, he was so mad. I just wondered why, you know, well, it's just a big cloud come out of the end of it when I shot, but, oh, Lord, and that's that kind of stuff that I stayed into, you know, oh, it just, oh, it was awful.
Yeah, you got the delivery all right. I ran back and I let loose with both barrels, and out came this stuff of what I didn't know. Oh, gosh. Oh, that's funny. Well, that's terrible funny. So did Buck make a good coon dog?
Made a really good dog. It took him a couple of years. At first, he was not able to focus on a raccoon scent. He'd get off on whatever. If he smelled this, he was on it. And, you know, I finally just got just frustrated with him. So, Dad, we joined the coon club down in Orangeburg, coon hunting club. And we took the dog down there for night hunts, and we'd stay at a little, you know, deer camp kind of thing down there, real rustic and primitive, you know, just a bunch of men hunting and that kind of stuff. And when I got him with other dogs that were focused on raccoons, see, now that was a different story. That's what he needed. So, you know, every weekend for seemed like months, we'd go down to Orangeburg. And I just, you know, I had to just warn Daddy out. I mean, because he, oh, man. But once I got him with other dogs and he got a little age on him, he mellowed out and he knew, you know, exactly what he was there to do. And I hunted for years, on up till I got my driver's license. And Daddy had old 76 Chevrolet pickup truck, long bed. We bought it brand new from Chevrolet place in Greenville. Clink Scales or something. Little bitty fella. Had a full bench seat had pleather plaid seat. Checkered blue. Blue and light blue and dark blue. And it was summertime, and I remember he closed the sale out and got his paperwork and paid the salesman. And we went and got in the truck, and that seat was so hot. I mean, it just burnt the back of my legs. I know we'll forget that. But it's three on the tree on the column. So when I turned 15 and got my learner's permit, Dad wouldn't let me. Couldn't drive after daylight. KO4NUE, KK4JBQ. After daylight with a learner's permit, but it was back then. There wasn't no house developments around here. It's tar and gravel roads, and he knew I was hunting, so he'd let me take the truck at night. So I put the dog box in the back of the truck and had an Airedale that we hog hunted with. And her name was Daisy. So she wanted to go. She wasn't a coon dog, but she'd stay with Bunt, and whatever he was trailing, she would bark when Bunt wouldn't, and I could tell where they were. Well, I put the dog box in the back of the truck, got my rifle, and got all my gear, threw it in the truck, and took off out the driveway, and forgot to close the tailgate. So when I turned out on Mount Lebanon Road, slung the dog box completely out of the back of the truck and didn't even know it. I got 4 miles down the road in Maggie Bottoms where I turned the dogs loose. And there wasn't no dogs in the truck. Oh, man. So I turned around and came back home. And there's the dog box in the middle of the road. And I mean, they were okay. But just stuff like that, I mean, just absent-minded kind of stuff, and it just caused a lot of problems.
Sound like things were hopping around home. Well, that's good. And it's much better when you look back on it than if you were quiet, reserved, without siblings. You know, you made up for it.
Exactly. So during the summer months, when I was off from school, my mother is from Pickens County, and my grandmother was Appalachian. And just totally different culture. Totally different culture. Very stern, very reserved, very focused on work and surviving. Grandmother had 13 kids. One died shortly after birth from cholera, maybe cholera. I can't remember if it was male or female, but Grandmother had a black and white steel photograph in the living room with her great granddaddy and 13 kids. And the 13th one died 2 days after birth. But there is 13 kids in the picture, which, unbeknownst to me, back then that was, customary at a child's death that they were deceased, but that was, an opportunity for an occasion for a photo. Not that it was a happy occasion, but it was an occasion to generate a photo. And then at 7 years after that, great-granddaddy died. I can't remember how how he died. So grandmother, point is, grandmother raised 12 children by herself. She never remarried. And all they had was the farm. So during the summer months, when school was over, Mama would take me to Grandma's, and I would spend most of the summer with Grandma. And that's where the deer camp is now. So I would spend my summer on the 12 Mile River and fishing and swimming and hunting and, you know, whatever. And Grandma she let me go. There was, you know, I didn't have transportation. I was too young, way too young to drive. But she knew I was, you know, out being a boy, and she never had a problem with it, but I had to be home by sundown. And she always had a hot meal. It was not conventional food. It was, you know, wildlife that we ate. But you talk about biscuits. Now, that woman, yeah, I get the whole biscuit thing. I do. But her only requirement was Sunday morning was you going to church, Roanoke Baptist Church. And this is the kind of church you show up at 9 o'clock and you're not home till 3 o'clock. One of those, you know, hellfire and brimstone kind of, you know, pastor shook. And, oh, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I wanted to be fishing or hunting or... So this one particular Sunday afternoon, she drove a white Maverick. And I snuck out of church and walked back to the house and got my fishing pole, and off I went fishing. And showed back up about supper time. Knew I was in trouble, but I had a stringer full of fish. And, you know, I'm thinking in my mind that Grandma's not going to get me too bad because I got a stringer full of fish. And, no sir. There's no fishing on Sunday. There's no recreating on Sunday. And you skipped out of church. So I got my tail blistered, and I walked back barefooted, and the road there going up to the farm was tar and gravel. It's still tar and gravel, as a matter of fact. Well, the county come down and spray tar on top of the roads, and the tar would pool up in these little puddles. And I like to take my toes and squish it in that tar. so I had tar all over my feet and in between my toes. So I got my tail tore up for skipping church, got my tail tore up for fishing, and she got my tail tore up because she had to go out in the shed and get kerosene to get tar off my feet. So, but she was a loving woman. She wasn't, you know, hateful or nothing, but you didn't mess with Sundays now. Grandma, she wasn't going to tolerate that at all. But she pretty much let me go and do what I wanted, and because I never caused no trouble, you know, just like to be outside and doing and going. But, you know, I don't know how I got off on this, I guess memories and all, but just, so that's where the deer camp is now. So it's part of the original farm, and Mom passed it along to me. I want to say, Larry, it's over 40-something acres. I can't remember what it is, but I have to look at the plat to find out. But that's why I have a connection to that place, because that's where I grew up during the summers. KO4NUE, KQ4JBQ.
As mentioned before, and I want to repeat it again, if there's anybody out there that'd like to join in on this conversation, you're absolutely welcome. So I'll leave a little space here for you. KK4JBQ. Didn't hear anybody, so... Yes, this is memories. This is stirring up. I wasn't there with you, but I was there with you. Do you know what I mean? I remember a couple of years there. I don't know how old I was. Preteen still, I guess. 11, 12, maybe. But I don't know what got into my head, but I didn't want to wear shoes. And we had a gravel road. I guess it was either oil or tar or something in between. I don't know what it was that they sprayed on it. But I know exactly what you mean by walking on gravel. And you know, my feet were tough enough. The gravel didn't hurt me. It was those black feet. Yeah, oh gosh, the memories. Wow, they just flood in. I lived on the top of a hill in Tennessee. And, I mean, right on the top. So, anyway, well, no, just a little bit down from the top. That's right. Any way you go, you'd have to climb the hill as in an automobile, and that's the way we put it. So come with travel there was really awful. It was, I mean, you took your life in your hand to leave the house. Mama didn't like that isolation. Dad loved it. He had a beautiful garden. He spent a lot of time in growing season. He spent a lot of time in that garden. One of the pictures I managed to shoot out of bathroom window. And upstairs, bathroom window, down on this field, and he was clearing. He'd let it lay fallow for a year. That's a biblical practice. And then he would go in with a scythe and cut that back. And my dad went all summer with no shirt on. He tanned up real good because Dad got most of the Cherokee, you know, he was half Cherokee, and he looked at dark hair, high cheekbones, rugged man. And he was down there in the field, stripped down to his breeches, and swinging that side back and forth. And something told me, I had nothing but a little brownie camera, but something told me, go get your camera. There'll be a day coming when you want to see this forever. I was right. KK4JBQ.
That's just good, hard times, but, you know, good times. And I don't know how I got off on Grandma, but I walked in on the other side of the house, and if you got a minute, I wanna share something with you, but I'm not gonna stay up to 2 o'clock tonight. I can't do it, but I do wanna share this with you. So this comes out of the first journal on the first deployment. This is about Grandma now. So, 1 March 03. Let's see, I've put off writing for some time, and the commander, Grandma, today is Saturday, and we buried Grandmother today on Thursday. The commander gave me 3 days to leave from the unit so I could help bury her and be a pallbearer. I think that her service was a very beautiful one, and that she would have enjoyed it if it had been for someone else. The service started with all of the grandchildren singing that glad reunion day. I I wasn't fond of singing in the choir, but for Grandma, it was okay. After the song, Aunt Kat wrote a letter about Grandma, and it was a story about how she had never had her something. She loved her and how important it was to wait when it comes to saying things like that. I can't read the writing. Grandmother loved her flower garden. I could feel the tears begin to trail down my face, and I could hear the drops hit my uniform. The eulogy was given by Aunt Sis. I don't see how she made it through that without really wailing, but she did. Andy and Destiny wrote a song about Grandma, and they both sang it while they played the guitar. I think that for myself, that was the highlight of the service. The song was named Judah, which is what he named his youngest son. The song basically is a song to Judah to tell him about Grandma. For he knew that he would not ever know her but through a song, talking about his son. I really cried and began to realize that Lewis, Perry, and Abby would never know her either. Let's see. Let me skip down here. I don't want to bore you with all the details, but Sis talked about how Grandma would blink the porch light on and off if the girls were not back in the house after a date, and if their dates did not bring them back into the house by a certain time. So Grandma would turn the lights on and off saying, hey, you need to get in the house. The funeral itself was sad, and I do remember something very strange while the service was going on. Four NUE KK4 JPQ. The pallbearers sat on the front row. That was place was reserved for the family. While the Reverend began to pray the last prayer a couple of minutes into it, I became surrounded by the fragrance of all the beautiful flowers that were there. I sat there for over an hour, and it was strange that I could only smell them near the end of the service. Verses were Proverbs 31, verses 10, 26, 27, 28, and 30. We drove to the Cedar Rock Baptist Church Cemetery, about 45 minutes away, to bury her. I guess that it hit me until your mother and I got back to her house, or Grandma's house, to meet with the family again. When I walked in that kitchen and I saw all the food laid out on the table, I lost it. Grandma would fix big meals like that for me when I was a child, and I guess all the memories came back all at once. I took some pictures of the leaning barns and her mailbox and her house, and I knew that I wanted to have pictures because I felt that I would never be back again. So many memories, and she will surely be missed. S.E. Whitmire, November 16th, 1912, February 24th, 2003. She was 90 years old.
Well, you are blessed to still have that and be able to look back on those words and to share them with me. That blesses me. I've had people close to me pass, and I've got a few, you know, visual memories, but nothing as written as I felt it at the time. And as I said, you're blessed to have that.
Just took a picture. I drew a picture before I left. Now, keep in mind, I had to go back to the unit to deploy. So I took a picture of it. I drew a picture of Grandma's house in the cornfield in front of the house. I'm not a drawer now, but I took a picture of it. Drew a picture of it in my journal. So I took a picture of that and just texted it to you. I don't know if you got it on your phone or not, but you can see kind of what the house looked like. You know, like I said, I'm not an artist, but you know, just kind of interesting, the old house. I mean, it's still there. Next time I go up there, I'll take a picture of it and send it to you. But it's just, man, memories. Oh man, just that's crazy.
Okay, I opened up my phone and I'm looking at the picture. Yep. Well, that's good. So that's a big window in the front. Are those flower boxes in the windows?
So the dark spot is the door, and to the right and left are the windows. The window on the right, the biggest one, that's where she had her those old glider chairs. You know, they didn't really rock. They glided, if that's proper, but they were gliders, and me and her sit on there in the afternoons when I, you know, was a child, and that just brings back all kind of stuff, you know. I mean, just good times, just really good times.
I know what a glider is. We had one also, and I have a memory of that glider. It was as long as a sofa. It was a single. It was quite, you know, wide. My mama, when she got a new bucket of paint, this was an occasion for my mom. I don't know why she never told me. She didn't talk to me about her growing up. So you just pick up little things like this. Why is it that when my mama opens a can of paint, nothing is safe? She will go around and she'll paint. If you know how people used to stack rocks up and then put the mailbox on top of the rocks, she'd paint the rocks black. Or blue, or, you know, whatever color she had opened. And she would keep painting things. That glider probably had been green, black, blue, and maybe other colors. It was just a different color all the time. Because she loved, maybe she didn't know how to seal it up and keep it from drying out or something. I don't know. But she paint everything. AK4JBQ.
Grandma never did paint, but she had her ways, you know. She did things that some of them I understand now that I'm older and kind of a responsible adult. But back then, I didn't know why she did the things that she did, but she had a her right leg. She was kicked by a mule when she was a young girl, and I think it damaged her leg pretty bad, broke it or something. I remember Mom talking about it. I never asked her about it, but she wore a heavy-duty stocking, a support stocking on her one of her legs. I can't remember, right or left. But anyway, it was not a cosmetic stocking. It was a support stocking. And at the end of the day, she'd take the stocking off when it got ready to, you know, go to bed. And I remember looking at her leg, and it was just real varicosey. You could see a definite imprint where she, you know, a hoof print had damaged her leg as a young child. And she didn't limp or anything, but just a sign of the times, I guess. But she taught me a lot. And primarily, Dad taught me how to shoot now, and I shot a lot with him, you know, squirrel hunting and things like that. But boy, she was a crack shot. I mean, she was deadly with that little .22, you know, because that's what we ate. Now, the kids would bring her food when they got out and got married. They made sure Grandma had what she needed. You know, she didn't want for anything. Kids would bring food. They paid the taxes on the property. They maintained the car, the house, and, you know, she didn't have to do those things. But she did. I guess she had done them for so long that that's just the routine and the way she lived. But she had a little bolt action .22 she kept behind the door, and the back porch was probably 10 feet wide and was screened in, and she would shoot through the screen wire to squirrel or whatever was down at the barns, and that's what, you know, she'd fix for supper: squirrel dumplings or squirrel stew or fried squirrel with sawmill gravy, whatever. One year we had she called them woodchucks, but it's groundhogs what it was. And some of that I just couldn't do. But when I met Anna and we would go up there for family dinners, it just scared Anna to death. She was a city girl. You know, we go up to Grandma's, who's, you know, Appalachian and full-on mountain, you know. We'd have to stop at Kentucky Fried Chicken on the way, and that's what Anna would eat, because she was afraid to eat what Grandma cooked. I was raised with it. But, yeah, the woodchuck, I just, you know, I couldn't do. But waste not, won't not. She didn't waste a thing. I mean, nothing. KO4 NUE KK4 JBQ.
Yeah. This is just stirring the old memory pot for me. My dad and I would hunt. He loved to hunt for squirrels. He liked to aim at trees, I think. I don't know. So we would bring squirrels home. Mom would always dress them and cook them. And I never developed a real appreciation for squirrel. You know, you can eat it, but it tastes gamier than chicken. I don't care if it's, you know, free range chicken that's out on the lawn or in the field or something. Squirrel just tastes gamier, but I liked it anyway. I liked anything that Mama put on a plate, because that woman could make gravy. And gravy will make everything taste better. Everything. I mean, gravy would make, well, just pick something that you wouldn't think of eating, but you just cover it in gravy and love it. my dad also liked ham, so we'd have practically every day meat left over from yesterday, meat prepared this morning, and meat prepared for the meal. So there were, you know, choices. We ate well. And there was always gravy, always biscuits, occasionally cornbread. But that gravy, I could sip it through a straw. KK4JBQ.
Grease and flour and milk, that's gravy. And then grease, flour, and cornmeal, that's sawmill gravy. She put a little flour in it, but it was kind of coarse, you know. But when we had fish, she'd make sawmill gravy. But when we had squirrel or, I mean, we didn't always eat things like that. I mean, we had, you know, pot roast or, you know, the soul food kind of stuff, you know. But it's always vegetable from the garden, always. And whether it was frozen or canned or whatever. And she had two pictures, Larry, that hung over the wall. And matter of fact, I need to talk with Aunt Sue about those. Aunt Sue owns the house now. But she had two pictures over the kitchen table. I don't know what artist they were, but one picture was a picture of a very stern looking woman over a plate of food, a very meager plate of food. I think she was saying a prayer. And then the other picture was a picture of a man, an older man, over a very meager plate of food, and he was saying a prayer of some sort. And it wasn't there's a lot going on in the pictures. It was, you know, you could tell they were very, you know, they were very, had a lot, they were faith, religious faith, and very meager amounts of food on the plate, and you could tell they had had a hard life, but they were thankful for what they had. I think actually they're actually a famous painting. I don't know who did it or who the artist was, but and I'm sure they were reprints. Reprints from the 40s or 50s. But I need to talk to Aunt Sue and see if she'll let me have those pictures, because I just remember those very stern people in those paintings looking down at me when I ate my food, because grandmother, you didn't waste food at all. And she would tell me before I sat down with my food, if you're not going to eat all of that on your plate, then I'm going to give you an opportunity to go put it back in the pot. You can go get more if you want, but whatever's on your plate, you're going to eat. And she would glance up at those pictures hanging on the wall, and that was my punishment. You know, that was my warning. And I normally would get up and go put some, you know, stuff back in the pot. But I didn't waste a thing. She wasn't going to tolerate it. KO4NUE, KK4JBQ.
We grew up different places, but in the same way. When we sat down at the table, I had that same conversation. If you put it on the plate, you will eat it. And you didn't get up before you finished everything on the plate. I always did, because I was careful. My brother was not careful. And he'd sit there and fall asleep and sleep through the night, sitting at his plate. Because he wouldn't, he'd take it and wouldn't finish it. Well, anyway. Oh, while we were talking about coon hunting, I remembered something that I want to mention to you. There's an old episode of Twilight Zone I think you'd appreciate, about a man who goes coon hunting with his dog. And the dog jumps into the creek, pretty deep, I take it, into the creek after the coon, who thought he could get away. Dog jumps in, dog don't come up. So the man jumps in after the dog. The man don't come up. But then it fades to the next morning, okay. And you see the man, he's out of the water now, and he's looking around for his dog. He finally finds his dog, and they go off back home. And he goes into the house, and he sees his wife there, and he says, "Wife," just like that. He said, "Wife, what's for breakfast?" And she goes on about her, whatever she's doing, and she don't answer him. And he says, "Wife, I'm talking to you." And she goes on about her business. Well, before he can figure out what's going on here, there's a knock at the door, and in comes the local preacher, and he offers her condolences and so forth. And come to find out, he wasn't aware that he was dead, and they were going to bury him that day. Well, if you're at all interested in this episode, and it's funny and it's poignant, it's called The Hunt. And if you, I think the full thing is on YouTube. Twilight Zone, The Hunt. And that'll bring it up. I think you'd enjoy it. KK4JPQ.
Check it out. I will. But while you were telling me about that, I Googled, and the pictures are called Grace and Gratitude, and they were painted by Eric Enstrom. You know, if you get a chance, check them out, and there's several versions of it, but find the oldest looking version you can find, and that will explain to you the way things were in Grandma's house. And when you see the pictures, you're going to say, "Oh, okay, I get it, you know. Grandma was just that way." But, you know, after raising three children, I cannot fathom 12 with no husband. My goodness. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine? But anyway, that kind of explains the pictures here, because going through what me and Anna have been through with three kids, boy, you won't talk about faith. And I imagine there were times when that's all she had. She didn't have anything else. So, you know, I get it. But it's called Grace and Gratitude. By Eric Enstrom, I think that was the painter. But check them out, and you can kind of see what I'm talking about. But anyway, well, Larry, I hate to cut it short, but I'm going to have to. It's close to midnight, and if I don't stop now, I'll be up till 2. And it just takes me 2 days to recover, so I'm on the bring it to a close and ask for closing statements. And this is KO4NUE, and I will be clear on your final, Larry. And please tell Miss Donna I said hello, and you just you go ahead with your final. I hate to do it, but I got to. But I gotta get some rest for tomorrow. But go ahead, KO4NUE.
KK4JBQ. Well, it's been a big day. You know, I've had a tour of the shop, and goodness, we had an absolutely great net tonight, something I'll remember for a while. And in this conversation, it's been a really fine day. And I have pulled up the paintings of grace and gratitude. I have seen these before. And they're, I suppose it's no mystery why they'd be in the dining room. Makes me think that in a home that I grew up in, there was a picture of Da Vinci's Last Supper in the dining room. And another picture that comes to my mind is one that hung over my bed when I was a child. And my mother, one time when I was home, she gave me the picture. It's the picture of an angel with wings and all, you know, looking over a child's cradle. I don't know that it has a title. It's from the 40s. It's classic, you know, from the 40s. It's not an original. It's a print, you know, and all that. But it's treasure to me. So I surely understand all that you feel about the paintings that hang in the dining room there. Well, Chad, and get yourself some good rest. You have earned it today. I'll say goodnight to you. And for anybody out there that's listened, you were welcomed. You were welcome to come in and join in. Thank you for being there, too. Talk with you later on, Chad. Get some good rest. 73, KK4JBQ, clear.